Terry Schiavo died in the glare of the media, with every branch of government, state and federal, having had a say. Today, President Bush said this about her death.
I urge all those who honor Terry Schiavo to continue to work to build a culture of life where all Americans are welcomed and valued and protected, especially those who live at the mercy of others. The essence of civilization is that the strong have a duty to protect the weak. Cases where there are serious doubts and questions, the presumption should be in the favor of life.
Joining us now, our regular political observers, columnists David Brooks of the New York Times and E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Georgetown University. Welcome to both of you once again.
Good to be here.
With you.
You've both written about the Schiavo case, and I'd like to pursue some of what you've written. David, you've described here a conflict between what you have called two serious but flawed arguments, social conservative and socially liberal.
Yeah, though I might emphasize that socially conservative views are now held by Jesse Jackson, so there's some uncomfortable or unusual groupings here. But I do think they're both serious arguments. The side of the social conservatives, if we want to call that, is that all life is intrinsically valuable and that all life is equal. The life of a comatose person is equal to the life of you and me. And that therefore once
we... Or fetal life, for that matter.
And once we start drawing distinctions between one life which we can hurry toward death and one life that we can't, then we really are opening the way to a hall of horrors. And so the conservatives draw a bright line between life, all life, and then the bright line between that and death. The social liberals, if we want to call it that, see more of a continuum of life. And that continuum is based on the faculties and the ability to be free and to make decisions and to experience the world around you with a fully capable person on one end and then a comatose person or somebody like Terry Schiavo toward the other end. And their argument is that it's up to each individual and each individual family to draw the line when life becomes so hurt or damaged that it's more dignified to die than to stay in that state. So it's really a division between these two fundamentally strong but I think flawed positions.
But if that's what the division really is, then it's not about getting a living will or sorting out guardianship properly. It's really about whether anyone, any family might choose to, say, withdraw life support or whether that's an occasion for the governor or the state legislature or the Congress to have a say.
Well, I guess my problem with the idea that it's all voluntary, that we all make our own decision, is that we're a community and we're a nation, and it's possible to decide badly, and we should be able to judge when someone has decided badly. I'm tend to be more slightly more on the socially liberal side of this debate, but I'm uncomfortable with the libertarian aspect to it, that we all get to decide when the life of a loved one ends, because people will make bad decisions and decisions that will horrify the rest of us. And as members of a community, we have a right to think about those decisions.
E.J. Dionne, now you've written about a phrase that President Bush used earlier. He paraphrased it today, that we should err on the side of life. Our preference, whenever there's doubt, should be on the side of life. A worthy ideal? Any argument with that?
No, I think it is a worthy ideal. So many of the things that have been said about the Schiavo case, I think, are worthy. What the president said today, the strong have a duty to protect the weak. To David's point, I agree that a clear moral line needs to be drawn. I draw it, and I guess I dissent from some of my liberal friends on this. I'm against doctor-assisted suicide. I think that would be a very dangerous step. On the other hand, I think in a case such as Terry Schiavo's, we need to distinguish between withdrawing either artificial or extraordinary means of support for someone who is gravely ill in a way that she was, and actually killing someone. I think if you don't hold to that moral distinction, then we lose our way altogether. But I think a lot of Americans looked at this case and were very uneasy with the forms of intervention, whether it was a Congress passing a bill that the president signed or all those demonstrators outside, because they, even people who have a deep respect for life, who are right-to-lifers themselves, said that after 15 years on artificial means of support, doctors were given time to keep her alive to see if something could be done. And decisions like this are made all the time, all over the country. And I think the distressing thing is that the Schiavo case was plucked out partly because there was a lot of mobilization around it, partly because there was that terrible conflict between her parents and the husband. And the whole thing became politicized in a way that I think not only bothered the social liberals David talked about, but a lot of very traditional conservatives who struggle with how do you draw clear lines and still face up to the fact that in an age of advanced medical technology, we are going to have to confront choices like this over and over again.
Let me put a hypothetical to you. What if American medicine, or medicine in general, improves sufficiently so that our cohort, when it hits its 80s and 90s, can routinely be kept alive, if comatose, for 15 years? If we all leave living wills saying, I'd like to live at all costs, I would always like to be there so that my family can visit and take comfort from my existence, are we serious? Can we have a society in which we keep alive millions of people who are comatose?
Personally, I don't think that is a pro-life position. It seems to me that there is a great distinction between doing everything we can to preserve life of a person who has a chance to move forward or get better versus keeping someone on a machine. A lot of conservative people have insisted, and I think they're right about this, on a distinction between actively killing someone, which I think is wrong, even when they are very sick and when they are old, and saying that at a certain point, the body can't really function anymore. And that's why these are such difficult issues.
But the thing that has driven this whole debate is our preference for individual choice. And that if hundreds of millions of individuals decide, I want to be kept alive forever.
Yes, we always assume a living will means someone's going to say, pull the plug on me. What if the living will says, I want to live for 100 years?
And that's, by the way, where all the money issues are going to come in the healthcare system, because doing that is very expensive.
That's what I was going to go to, that at some point when a lot of people decide they want to be kept on life support, we are going to hit the funding issue. We've got the Medicare program, which is on the verge of bankruptcy as it is. We've got $44 trillion in unfunded liabilities. The vast chunk of that money is spent in the last 6 months of life. At some point, the cruel economics is going to – I don't know how it's going to push sort of the human issues aside, but it may necessitate this cruel accounting in which you're whether you want to be kept alive or not, doesn't matter. We can't afford it.
Well, thanks to both of you for shedding light, as always.
Thank you.
David Brooks of the New York Times, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post.